But I did enjoy the summer, going out to these different places and Madderty and meadows and farms, houses, whatever it was fantastic. But I had a great summer, and I thought I am going to talk about some things which are quite, you know, tough, because we're talking about Joseph's life, and there's a lot of tough things going on. So, and all things is really what I'm going to be talking about. So I thought I'd talk about a thing that happened to me in the summer. It's funny, okay? So relax. Anyway, so I'll give you a story. I have loved cricket most of my life. I go to cricket mats. I'm a Yorkshireman. Cricket for me is like whiskey is to a Scotsman. Yeah, all that type of thing. And after 35 years, Francis finally said, yes, okay, I will go to a cricket match. Just one, and I will go. So in the summer, I got tickets for England against South Africa. Where's Leslie? England against South Africa. And this first picture here is Francis approaching the gates of Headingley. That's like the gates of heaven, yeah? I'm so excited. 35 years! Glory! This is glory. There she is. She's got a little haversack, and she's going into the gate. And then the next slide, she's finding her seat in the Western Terraces. Oh, and there I'm taking a picture, bringing her in. This is 35 years, darling. I'm loving this. And there we go. We're going to sit down. Next picture. There's the view of heaven. Headingley Cricket Ground, Yorkshire. I've waited this so long. And then the clouds did threaten. And it rained. It started to rain. Now, this is optimism. This is pessimism. This is why am I here? I'm hating this anyway. It's now getting worse. And anyway, that's what happened. It started to rain anyway. It got worse. We did come back out. They came out to pray a little bit more and then went back in again. And then the next slide was the piece de resistance. She fell asleep! She fell asleep at Headingley! Absolutely out for the count. She fell asleep. All things for those. Okay, moving on. I'll try and bring this back to normality. We're in the story of Joseph, and we're at the end of the story of Joseph. We've been looking at the life of Joseph, and it's actually been a really exciting. Matt started us off back in the beginning of July, wasn't it? I'm bringing it to an end, so I'm in chapter 50. Genesis is a long book if you ever read it. And so I'm just going to read the last bit. And when Joseph is being approached by his brothers. They've had a lot of interactions. There's all sorts of things happened in their lives. We'll see that in a minute. And it says this in Genesis chapter 50, verse 15. It says, when Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, that's Jacob, they said, it may be that Joseph will hate us and pay us back for all the evil we did. It's interesting, isn't it? So they sent a message to Joseph saying, your father gave this command before he died. Say to Joseph, please forgive the transgressions of your brothers and their sin because they did evil to you. And now please forgive the transgressions of the servants of God, your father. Joseph wept, it says, when they spoke to him. And his brothers also came and fell down before him and said, behold, we are your servants. Just an interesting point there. That is the fulfillment of the dream of Joseph when he had the dream right at the beginning. Isn't it amazing? All that story ends up with his brothers falling down in front of him, exactly what he dreamt. And then he says this, but Joseph said to them, do not be afraid. Don't be afraid. For am I in the place of God? As for you, you meant it for evil against me. But God meant it for good, to bring about that many people should be kept alive as they are today. but the saving of many lives. It's an amazing end of an amazing story. And this one sentence is the one sentence that I think is stands out amongst all the things about Joseph is, God meant it for good. And it's a recognition, Joseph is recognizing that really bad things happened to him. Really bad things. And yet God had used them for good. Now, I don't know about you, but when bad things happen, we struggle, don't we? As Christians, we actually believe God should protect us all the time. And when things do go wrong and bad things happen, whatever they are, we find it very hard. I had a book on my bookshelf called When Bad Things Happen to Good People. It took me about 7 years to read it because I refused to read it. Because I couldn't accept it. I did read it in the end, by the way. But you know, when bad things happen to us, that an accident, you know, accidental things like somebody who crashes into you on the road, or it's bad, isn't it? Your car gets broken. But we sort of can accept that. We can cope with that. It's okay, yeah, you had an accident. You didn't see the turning. I mean, it can be tragic as well. But we sort of accept that. We can also accept when somebody neglects us and we can sort of cope, okay, they didn't see us that time and or whatever. We can cope with that. But when it's direct evil against us and it's directed at us, we find that really frightening and shocking. I was working in a company for quite a long time, and I had a colleague who was a sales manager. I was like the senior consultant that he would sell me into these companies. I actually quite liked him. He's a guy from the US. I got on with him really well during the day. We'd go out and do work on different client sites and everything. Anyway, we went to a company day. And company day is when all the company gathers together and they all chat and generally go out in the evening. And we went out in the evening and there's a few drinks. They had a few drinks, like you do. And this guy was in the group with me. And sort of getting towards 9 o'clock, I don't know what happened, but he absolutely turned on me and he absolutely attacked everything I was and did for no reason whatsoever. And he actually did it to another colleague as well. I actually had a suspicion it was spiritual. I don't want to overemphasize that, because he was a person that discovered that I was a Christian at some point. But because what he said, some of it was utterly evil. It was horrendous. I was deeply shocked. When somebody speaks evil, it's shock. We don't expect it. It's interesting, Joseph says that. You meant it for evil. He doesn't mince around. But what does God say about this? What does the New Testament say about these things that happen in our lives? And it's this, if you go to the next slide. And it's a famous verse. It's a verse I think all Christians should know. It's one of the top 10, if you want to call it. It's not that we should know a lot more than that, but top 10, if you want to know a verse, this is a really, really important verse. And this, in a way, summarizes of what happened in Joseph's life, and we'll see it in a minute. Verse 28 of Romans 8, and we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love him, who have been called according to his purpose. Now that little word, all things, do you know what it means? I've spent a long time studying this, reading lots of commentaries. A lot of people have looked at it. Do you know what it means? All things. It's great, isn't it? You pay money for this. Okay. It means all things. Therefore, it means good and bad things. And it's something incredible in God that he's able to take all things and work them for the good. of those who love him. Let's look at the life of Joseph. Let's look at the life of Joseph. We've been studying in the last few weeks, so you should know this. Joseph had a dream. He told it to his brothers. Joseph had another dream, and he told it to his parents. And they weren't very pleased with this, because it was pretty funny dreams about them bowing down to him. Jacob, his dad, made him a multicolored coat, and his brothers hated him, and they wanted to kill him. Reuben, the older one of the other brothers, decided that was a bit nasty, so they put him in a pit, as we know. And some slave traders came past, and they'd happened to sell him to the slave traders, their own brother. And they put blood on his coat, and then he went back to dad and went, well, he's been killed by a wild animal. And his dad was absolutely devastated. Then Potiphar buys Joseph. Now, Potiphar isn't just anybody, it's Pharaoh's right-hand man. And Joseph was very successful serving Potiphar. Potiphar puts him in charge of the whole house. Then Potiphar's wife gets the hots for him, all right? And she then accuses him of rape, which means he's sent to prison. Not any type of prison, the king's prison. And he's in prison. And Joseph is even successful in the prison. The jailer puts, therefore, Joseph in charge of the whole prison, which is fascinating. He just puts him in charge of the whole thing. It's interesting. Success is not just about what we see outwardly. Success is where you're at, even in prison. Anyway, then the king, Pharaoh, throws two of his workers into prison, the baker and the cupbearer. They both have dreams. Joseph interprets them and interprets them correctly. The baker dies. The cupbearer is reinstated. The cupbearer leaves. And as he's leaving, Joseph went, just don't forget to tell people about me. I'm still here. And the cupbearer says, yeah, I'll do that. And like most teenagers, forgets it completely. But anyway, sorry, that was an aside. Okay, and then he goes back to being a cupbearer with Pharaoh. 2 years later, the Pharaoh, ruler of Egypt, has a dream. He can't get it translated. Nobody can explain it to him. So he says, who can help me? And the cupbearer remembers Joseph in prison, reinterpreted his dream. So he says, get Joseph. Joseph comes and interprets Pharaoh's dream correctly. And guess what? Pharaoh puts him in charge of the whole of Egypt. A few years later, the brothers come from Israel, Palestine area, because there was a terrible famine. Joseph reveals who he is and saves his family and is reconciled to his family. All things work together for the good of those who love God. Just think, if Joseph doesn't have a dream, his brothers wouldn't have hated him. If his brothers wouldn't have hated him and sold him into slavery if he had not heard the dream. If he didn't get sold into slavery, he would have never met Potiphar. And if he didn't meet Potiphar, he wouldn't have met Potiphar's wife, who was evil, and he wouldn't have been sent to prison. And if he didn't get put in prison, king's prison, he wouldn't have been able to interpret Pharaoh's dreams. And if he hadn't interpreted Pharaoh's dreams, he wouldn't have been able to save his family. All things work for the good of those who love God. So in this story, jealousy, slavery, a crazy woman accusing him falsely, a prison. There's a lot going on, isn't there? Bad things. My life, Francis and I lived in Newcastle. And we were settled. We had 4 kids. Great house, but we hadn't been to a cricket match, as you know. But anyway, that's an aside. And one day I went to church, just like this morning, and I was like Tom, I was leading the meeting, and somebody came up to me in the middle of the meeting and said, I think you better go. Why? Your wife is not very well. She's in outside, and she's seriously ill. What? So I had to drop leading the meeting and take Frances to hospital from this church. She was losing lots of blood. There was no idea what the problem was. They did a scan. and they did a saw a large mass on the scan in her stomach. And they told us it was pancreatic cancer. Basically, she wasn't going to live. And then because it was pancreatic cancer, they moved her to another hospital in Newcastle, which was a specialist hospital for that type of thing. When we arrived at that hospital, the first thing the doctor did was look at Frances, look at the scan, and says, I don't know what it is, but it's not pancreatic cancer. But I have no idea what it is, but it's certainly a mass. They steadied her down, and because she was in that hospital, they couldn't move her, so they had to operate on her. So the surgeon that was in that hospital, even though it was nothing to do with what she had now, he had to do it, and he had to come and do it within a short space of time, otherwise Frances would have died. So he operated on her, and he was a liver specialist. He actually did liver transplants. That's his role. When they got in to Frances and they found the cancer, it wrapped around her liver. So he was perfectly positioned to be able to remove it, because he understood the liver and the veins around the liver. It's a very, very complex organ. He was absolutely amazed. He constantly said to us afterwards, I don't know how you ended up in my operating theatre. I would have never normally done this operation, but actually I was. He's a bit of a big head as well, typical surgeon. He said, I was the only person who could ever do this, and actually other nurses and doctors said it. He was the only person who could actually deal with the issue. At the same time, I lost my job, or effectively was put on redundancy list. I was threatened to be removed completely from my company. In the middle of this crisis, just one thing after another, God did an amazing deliverance. He delivered Frances through this amazing operation, she's here today, and actually provided work at the last minute when I was about to be made redundant through a company asking for my work. A short time later, I was driving down to the Bible Week at North, and I turned to Frances in the car and joked and said, we're game for anything for God now, aren't we? He's just amazing. He's delivered us from this terrible illness, and we are delivered from, you know, also the whole financial insecurity. And I laughed with Frances. I said, we're really game for anything, aren't we? And a day later, there was a knock on my caravan door at North, and a gentleman called Matthew Clifton Brown opened the door, and I saw him, and he had a smile on his face. It was always dangerous when Matthew had a smile on his face. I knew he was up to something. Anyway, and he sat down, and he said, we've got this church in Scotland which needs some help. I can tell you now, if not God hadn't done those things, I would have chucked him out of the caravan probably head first. There's no way in God's earth I would have ever thought of coming to Perth. I have no connections with Scotland, anything except what God said, and he clearly called us. The rest is history. I'm here. Just think, if Francis, do I need to do it again? All those things working together. Do you know what's so important is you don't try and celebrate bad things. When I was in that hospital, and they told me my wife had pancreatic cancer, it was devastating to say that and think, I'm going to lose my wife. What do I say to my kids? These are bad things. God doesn't say, I'll make them nice. He says, I will work with the bad and the good for your good. So it's really important we don't think God just somehow transforms bad things. They are bad. But he works together, them together, just like Joseph. Now, I just want to address a couple of things, and then I'm going to finish. But one thing here is that a lot of people, when we read the word for the good of those who love him, we define our good. We say it's my good. Okay, that means my holiday, my promotion, my leadership position. But God doesn't look at that. He looks at it indifferently. And you can see this in Joseph's life. One of the biggest things that God was doing through the whole life of Joseph was working on him with humility. It was a long, painful journey of humility. And Joseph kept saying, I'm ready. I'm ready. And he kept, God said, no, you're not. And he kept saying, but I am ready. I am not. No, you're not. And every time he tried, it was one continuous working in Joseph to remove pride. And as Rowan said last week, you can't rush this process, but it is for the good. Why? Why? Because when he got to the palace, he could stay there because he'd been dealt with in the past with all the issues he'd gone through. He was able to handle his brothers coming back. He was able to handle all of that because God had done a work in his life. Now, you say, oh, is that good? Yes, it was. Because he helped Joseph come to the place where he could save his own family. Can you imagine if Joseph had not had his heart right when his brothers came back? It would not have happened. So it is the good, and it's how God sees it. It's not always what we think. And the second point is actually what in what Joseph says. Joseph says something else. He says, as for you, you meant it for evil against me, but God meant it for good, to bring about that many people should live. This is the amazing thing. God worked in Joseph, not just for Joseph, but for the whole nation of Israel. It's stunning to think that he was working in Joseph for others. And I think Joseph at the end realized by that sentence that it wasn't just about him. It was about the salvation of many, many others. Well, of course, we know Jesus. Jesus scorned the cross for the joy set before him. So many, many could know God. And that's the same principle taking place here. Joseph had come to the realization, this is not just about him, it's about others. And his goodness is actually, his good is with others as well. Okay, I'm going to finish. I know if what it's like when difficulties happen and arise and when they don't resolve quickly, which is always good when things happen bad and then they go away, don't they? But when they're long-term ones, they're difficult. I always think, what would Joseph honestly say when he was looking after Potiphar's house and within a short space of time, he was accused of rape and he was put in prison and there was no concept of whether he was guilty or not and he was left. I mean, think about how he would have felt. But everything was going so well. Now it's an absolute disaster. And it goes on for years. And I know what it's like when you stare blankly at the end of the week when nothing has changed. When the prison walls seem incredibly thick, it is very tough. What can help us? What can help us in that moment? Yes, this story is great, but we need something more. It helps us to know God's got a big picture, but we need to know more. What can help us? Well, I'm just going to bring you back to one little illustration. Matt started with Joseph's robe. Now, we don't know for sure whether it was multicolored or ornamented or some kind of, but it was a posh robe, put it that way, and it was certainly very decorated. We know it was given by Jacob to Joseph. But I want you to take you back further than that. I want you to take you back to his great-great-great-granddad, Abraham. And Abraham was the father of Isaac. Now, Abraham got a promise from God that he'd be a father of many nations, and through him, many nations will come to God. That was Abraham's promise. And if you ever looked at early part of Genesis, you'll see that. Abraham was the father of Isaac. Isaac was the father of Jacob. Jacob was the father of Joseph. And as we know, Joseph gave him a multicolored coat by his dad. Also, Joseph became even a father to Pharaoh. He says that at the end. There's some kind of prophetic declaration about this coat. It's much more than we think. There was his great-great-granddad had a promise from God that all the nations would come, and there's something represented in that robe, that coat, that's been carried on down the generations. But this robe was taken off Joseph and covered with the blood of an animal. And his dad was told he'd been killed by an animal. There's somebody else coming later who had a robe, who carried the same promise that Abraham had. That somebody was Jesus. He carried a robe, and he carried the promise. He was sent by the Father so all the nations could gather back to God and know God. All the longings of human hearts were based in for Jesus. And Jesus came, and he had a robe. He had a robe. And he was ripped from him. And a crown of thorns were put on his head. And he faced evil right in its face. And his robe was used as a fun game. They drew lots on it. They ripped it and they just, oh, let's have a bit of a game. Let's roll some dice. Who gets it? He was killed in a brutal, evil death. Jesus has gone before us. That's what it says. He has faced evil. And he won. And he now declares with us, in our prisons, whatever they are, that he is with us. And he will never leave us. Jesus, through his Holy Spirit, is with us in that prison, in that difficulty, in that whatever it is. And we can draw strength from him. And his promises, no evil will prevail. No one will snatch you from my hand. And no evil will ever have the last say. Never. The last say is never evil. Never what has happened. It's what God has said, and what God has done is the final say. And we stand in that victory. And we ask him, and we draw on him, we lean on him in our difficulties. And we draw strength from the one who got through, who fought and won. And he says, I'll be with you to the end of the age. His robe was covered with his own blood, not an animal's. He was scourged, so he would have been covered with blood. But that moment was victory. And we draw on that. I don't know the answer sometimes. I know some people are being through prisons. I would say sometimes people tell me things and I go, oh my God, I don't know what to say to them. All I can say is he has gone before us. No evil ever surprises Jesus. And we can draw on him. And I want you to do that in anything you face. Is to go back to him, the one who went before us, whose robe now represents victory.